Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. MoranTechnology.com. This podcast features a session from the 2012 EDUCAUSE Annual Conference. It's the Core Data Service 2012 results, and our speaker is Leah Lang, Senior IT Metrics and Benchmarking Analyst for EDUCAUSE.
Before I get into everything today, I just want to give two disclaimers on my discussion. One, the results today are still preliminary. We're working on a summary report that will be published in January. And I just developed this horrible cough within the last few weeks, and I have two emergency cough drops up here, so I'm going to try to do my best to get through today without getting into too much of a coughing fit. So we'll see how that goes. So like we like to say that core data has been used since 2002 to inform IT strategic planning and management. Since 2002, about 750 to 1,000 institutions participate in core data each year. And since 2002, out of 2,700 or so institutions that are eligible for core data, 1,600 have participated in at least 1 year of core data. And the average yearly, the average number of years an institution participates in core data is about 4 years. So sometimes people participate a few years in a row and then drop out and then come back, but we see pretty consistent trends of people staying in the service. First, I just want to give a little background on core data. We like to say that core data benefits, first of all, you, because when you participate in the survey, you gain access to an identifiable data set where you can look at core data and compare line by line your data against your peers' data. And you can do that through our website. And we'll be talking a little bit later about our new reporting tool, which is coming out soon. And secondly, your participation in core data benefits your peer group, because when you participate, your peers can see your data, and if you can imagine, if there's 20 or so peers that all want to know about each other, the more of those peers that participate, the better and more rich the data set is for that peer group. And here's a little screenshot of our new reporting tool, which we're excited about. And all of higher education benefits when you participate because of all of the great products that EDUCAUSE produces, from the CDS Almanacs to the CDS Summary Reports, and as well as a lot of ECAR research that uses core data. And that benefits the entire population. So the survey is broken into 12 different little surveys. Not every module, we call the little surveys modules. Not every module is applicable or necessary for every institution to complete, so you kind of pick and choose what you want to participate in each year. Module 1 is the only module that's required by all institutions, so if you are interested, if you're new to core data and you're interested in participating and you're not really sure which of the optional modules you want to complete, all you have to do is complete Module 1. And it has about 45 questions in it. It's actually smaller than the legacy survey used to be. This year, we'll be launching, traditionally core data has been in the winter or the spring months, but we're working on trying to get the most recent and accurate data, financial data from institutions. So we'll be shifting the timeline slightly, and we'll be collecting the data over the summer. And most institutions that participate in core data close their financial books in the summer. So we're hoping that when the data collection period overlaps that time, we can collect the most recent financial data from that institution. So let's move on to the results. First, we'll do just a bit of an overview on actual participation in core data. This is the number of institutions that participated by Carnegie class. As you can see, lots of community colleges, the AA at the end of this bar chart, have participated almost in line Actually, more community colleges have participated than public doctoral institutions, and private bachelor's institutions have the most numbers of participants in CORE data for this year. But if you look at this slide a little differently, it's interesting because if you look at response rates for each of these groups, there are so many community colleges out there that the response rate for, even though lots of community colleges participate in comparison with the other Carnegie classes, there's so many community colleges that their response rate's actually a little bit lower. And so we might actually know less about community colleges than we would hope, or maybe that we know about public doctoral institutions, even though the same numbers of institutions participate from year to year. So we're really hoping that more community colleges participate in CORE data because we want to know more about that section of the population. Here's just general numbers of responses for each module in the survey. No surprise to us that module 4, research computing, is a little bit less because usually research computing services are focused at public larger doctoral institutions. And modules 11 and 12 are only required for certain institutions. Module 11 is only for offices of multi-campus systems or districts, and so there's few of those that participate in CORE data, so the numbers are a little lower there. And module 12 is only for institutions that are based in countries outside of the United States. Module 12 is not for institutions that are U.S.-based that have foreign campuses. So the numbers are a little bit smaller for that module also. But in general, there's quite a bit of participation across all of the different topics. And all of the modules are broken out into specific service areas in higher ed IT, and so you can really get a focused look at each of those specific areas. And here's a look at the international participation. Australia and Canada, they're EDUCAUSE affiliate, EDUCAUSE type groups really encourage their schools to participate in CORE data, so that's why they have a lot of participation. These other groups, China, Mexico, all of that that was one of each, one institution from each of those countries participated, and in the South Africa, New Zealand group, two institutions from each of those countries participated. So we have a pretty good mix of international participants. So as I said, the modules in CORE data are kind of broken up into service areas in higher ed IT. And I've broken our, and I think of it as kind of a higher ed IT org chart. And I've broken up our discussion today into all of these different organizational components. So today, first of all, today, when I was little, I kind of liked those books where you could decide like where the story went on your own. If you want the story to end up this way, pick page 7. If you want the story to end up this way, pick page 15. Those weren't like the best novels ever, but they were interesting to me because I got to decide. So you're going to get to decide where this discussion goes today. We're not going to cover all of these topics, but we'll let you vote on which one you want to talk about next. But first, we'll go over just a general overview of the IT organization and some main financial stats that are involved there. The other thing you should know about CORE data is, you may or may not know, even if you've participated, there's an actual glossary that we maintain, and the definitions in that glossary are supposed to facilitate the response, accurate response to our questions. So we have many definitions that relate to all these different areas of IT, and we want to be really specific about what we mean when we say research technology services or support services or the data centers. So we're really, the definitions are still a little bit fuzzy right now, and we're always working to improve upon those. But I wanted to give you, before I talk about each of these sections, I wanted to tell you what we think these different parts of the organization mean. So this is administration of central IT, which kind of relates to the overarching topic that I'll discuss, the IT organization. So here's a look at central IT funding per student FTE. This is a stat we use regularly to kind of benchmark against peer institutions. These ratios are really helpful because they kind of normalize the IT spending. If you look at just blanket spending numbers, obviously doctoral institutions are a little higher than some of the other smaller schools, and we'll look at that in a second. So normalizing based on student FTE or faculty FTE or total numbers of people on your campus is a good way to benchmark against your peers. And here, as I said, these are preliminary results, and this compares our 2011 data to our 2012 data. There's a little bit of a dip in funding for private doctoral institutions. I'm not really sure what that's about quite yet, so I'm still looking into that. But as you can see, for the rest of the groups, the medians, and these bar charts, these are kind of, you can think of these as box plots, and the line in the middle is the median. And you can see that for the other groups, the medians are sort of on par with last year. Here's a look at the raw numbers. Just as I said, if you don't normalize on a variable like population, you get, it's very difficult to compare across Carnegie classes because the numbers are so different. Here we see that operating funding is the bulk of the IT financial state. A lot of, there's other aspects of funding that we ask about, and not every group of institution uses those types of funding to support their IT department. But we're seeing in the public doctoral section that they are using a lot, a large portion of their budget is chargeback, and private doctoral institutions are using that to a lesser extent, but you see that less and less in the other groups. So that's been interesting to us. We are looking to keep track of this over time. So another thing that I was curious about is there, we keep track of all these data on the CIO and their title and who they report to and how long they've been in position and if they're a strategic member of their campus organization. Are they on the executive council at their institution? And I'm curious about how this relates to funding. So I wondered if maybe tenured CIOs who have been around longer are getting more funding. And I took a look at this number and saw that it dropped off a little bit as the CIOs have been around longer. But then I saw that if you look at this same bar across their position, you can see that if you break it out by Carnegie class, you can see that most of the younger CIOs are at the institutions that just generally get the most budget, and that the CIOs who have been around a little bit longer are at the just generally at the institutions who have smaller budgets. So I'm not sure exactly which story this tells us. But I thought, you know, it was an interesting result to investigate a little bit further. Here's a look at IT staffing. With core data, we're always focused on three key pillars, and those are financials, staffing, and services. And so you'll see that as a theme as I go throughout this discussion. We just discussed financials, IT financials, and now we'll talk about staffing. But there's lots of detailed data in the survey on all of these topics. So most of the staff in the IT departments is IT administrative staff, and that's pretty clear across the board. And then second is the second biggest pool of staff in all of these groups is support services. And then once you get down to what the number three ranking is, it's pretty consistently information systems, but for public doctoral institutions, you can see it's a hedging on communications and infrastructure, and the same for other U.S. groups. Public bachelor's institutions have just as many educational technology services staff as they do ERP staff. And then you can see that the other service areas sort of get less FTEs dedicated to them. So we also ask about outsourcing, and 89% of institutions outsource at least one IT function, and this question that we ask has 40 or so different IT functions, and it's just a checkbox, and you can tell which ones you outsource. And the median across is pretty consistent across all the Carnegie classes. But when you look at the services that they're outsourcing, it's not really a big surprise. Email for students is a huge one that's been broadening in the last few years as an outsourced service. Learning course management system, I think people are just kind of going to the cloud, and we have some ERP data about that. So print services is usually something that's not handled by the central IT department anyway. So these things kind of make sense. They weren't surprising. One new question for this year was whether or not you maintain a service portfolio. And I was a bit surprised to see that so many actually do maintain a service portfolio. And when we asked this question, we asked them to provide a link to your service portfolio if it's public. So we'll be mining that data a little bit later to see if there's any commonalities across structures of services. And we'll be looking to figure out if there's an overarching service portfolio that's common. I know everybody kind of sometimes gets into the weeds really quickly when we bring up the topic of service portfolios, but it might be interesting to see if there's actual trends across groups. And SLAs are still popular. Help desk is the most popular service to have an SLA. These other services are probably not very surprising to you, the desktop computing and data center operations. So here we are back at our map. So if you can, tweet which of these next topics you want to talk about, and I'll try to monitor this on my Twitter feed here. If this doesn't work, I'll just pick whatever we want to talk about. I'll give you a hint. I'm most excited about support services and IT security and ERPs. Okay, so maybe I'll just take the lead and go on support services, and then you can tweet as I'm talking about that, and you can vote on the next topic. So here's the definition we have for support services. It includes help desk, desktop computing, user support, training, and the computer store. I know a lot of campuses might not have the computer store actually within the central IT department, so I'm interested in exploring that a little further. Most of support services is funded by the operational budget, but you can see that student technology fee and cost recovery are also big components of this funding model. Here's median desktop computing staff for all the different Carnegie classes. Private doctoral institutions have the lead at 15, but there's a pretty good sizable staff at most Carnegie classes. And mostly desktop computing is run by central IT and sometimes by other administrative units. And they're usually covered, not usually, they're about a quarter of the time they're covered by an SLA. Here's a look at median staff for the help desk. And this is a little bit smaller. We'll look at another interesting stat based on staffing in a second. But the median overall is about 3 and 2 students. And they're primarily run by central IT. So there's kind of a theme, supports usually within the central IT department. Many community colleges run their help desk by an external support. more so than any of the other Carnegie classes. Okay. And as far as support method, phone, email, walk-in are still the prevalent methods of support, but you can see down towards the bottom of this graph, the social media methods of support are kind of up and coming, and we'll be watching that over the years because many, as students come to campus and they're more often used to using social media to ask for help, you can see the campus is kind of coming towards that. And self-service is also becoming a little bit more popular. So here's a look at help desk use by student FTE. This was a new question this year. We asked number of tickets that you get per year for walk-ins, phone, and email. And this seems to be kind of in line with the number of staff you have at your help center. If you remember the slides previous, the doctoral institutions had the most staff, and the community colleges had the had smaller numbers of staff at their help desk. So these seem to be related, but this might be an interesting benchmark for you to use on your campus to see if you are busier or less busy than most. That's what I have to say about support services. Let's check on the Twitter feed. All right, teaching and learning wins this time. That's good. Here's our definition for educational technology services. We have it broken into five different areas, and we ask questions in each of these areas in the survey. Funding is mostly operating budget again, a little bit of the student technology fee, some chargeback. And here's the look at staffing. And this is across all of those educational technology services. We ask about what the demand is like for these shared computer workstations, so computer labs, kiosks, virtual labs, and we ask about how many of these types of things do you have, and is the demand for these different services changing over time? And for the most part, the demand is staying the same. But if there is any increase in demand, it's usually going to be seen in the laptop checkout section or the virtual labs. And that's I'll be interested to look at this over the years, too, because virtual labs seem to be becoming more popular. So this is a look at the same question that this question that asked about number of machines that you have in each of these different areas, and we'll take a look at the ratio of machines to students on each campus. So here's the red bars are students per laptop. Bigger here is worse, so community colleges have a pretty good ratio of students per laptop, but that that's mostly because they're servicing different types of students than doctoral institutions. And then you can see that public master's institutions have the most laptops available for checkout, and they also have a pretty low ratio of students per laptop. Here's a look at something similar for workstations in academic buildings. Community colleges have many, many, many workstations and a low ratio. The number of workstations is pretty even across the other groups, but as you can see, the ratio goes up as the student population increases. Kiosks. Kiosks are those little walk-up stations at on your campus. And private doctoral institutions seem to have the most in general on their campuses, but their ratio of students per kiosk is still pretty high because they have a bigger population. Um, And the number of kiosks across is pretty similar. So here's a look at support services for faculty. Most support services for faculty are provided by Central IT, but as you can see, some are provided elsewhere. Here's the top four support services provided to faculty. Here's the next level down. Student technology assistance available to help faculty for technology is most commonly not provided in this group. And here's the least commonly provided support services for faculty. So special grants or awards for innovative use of technology, for use of instructional technology is the least commonly provided service for faculty. And you can see that if it is provided at all, it's mostly provided by somewhere else on campus. We also ask about types of technology you have in the classroom. All of these technologies were at more than 85% of the institutions, so these are the most popular technologies in the classrooms, followed by least common classroom technologies, which are clickers and video cameras and lecture capture, at less than 3% of institutions. And that's what we have to say about educational technology services. All these slides will be available online. And there are stats on each of these different types of services, even though we won't get to go through all of them today. I want to just pick one more service to go through. And then I'll follow up with a demo of our new reporting tool so that you can see that. Let's go to information systems. Here's our definition of information systems. As I said earlier, we're still refining these definitions and we'll be improving them as we go. Mostly funded by the operating budget, a little bit by chargeback. Lots of schools, not lots, non-insignificant number of schools have their ERP systems provided at the system or district level, so you see that pop up, whereas it wasn't in other IT areas. Staffing is pretty high for the ERP systems. And here's a look at age of system. So where the bar splits in the middle is the median age, and the lowest end on the red end, the dark red end, is the lower 25th percentile for age, and then the other is the 75th percentile for age. So these are box plots also. The oldest, according to median, the oldest systems are library systems. The newest systems are customer relationship management systems. We also ask a bunch of different questions about whether or not you use a vendor or an open source application, and whether or not your system's homegrown, and whether or not you want to replace in the next 3 years. And I thought it might be interesting to overlay that data on this graph, so we'll go through those. I wondered if it was related to age of system at all. So outsourcing, as we know, student email is frequently outsourced, and then that's the next four most popular outsourced systems are staff and faculty email, facilities, learning management, and library. And then if we look at open source, the web and content management system is the most commonly outsourced, along with learning management. And then it trails off after that. This is a top five again. And in terms of homegrown systems, we learned in our ECAR report on the enterprise application market space that grants management is the most commonly homegrown systems, and then followed by the portal and administrative data warehouse. So that didn't seem to be related to age of system, in my opinion. Here's a look at plans to implement in the next 3 years. If you don't have a customer relationship management system, you may be 13% of institutions plan to implement one in the next 3 years, along with an administrative data warehouse. And in terms of plans to replace in the next 3 years, student email is high on the list. Help desk ticket system is high on the list. Although you can see that not the majority of institutions are replacing these systems, it's still in the lower third of institutions that are replacing and implementing these systems. So I want to give you a look at our reporting tool, and then I want to give you some time to ask questions. So the new core data reporting tool is, if you're familiar with the way the service was several years ago, we had a reporting system that would summarize all of the data in the survey, and you could kind of visually navigate the summary data and compare the results against your peer group. And in recent years, we weren't able to provide that service, but now we're looking to give you that functionality back. And so we're excited to be able to put that data in your hands again so that you can get the information you need when you need it and ask the questions that you need to and explore the data a little further. So we'll take a look at this. And there will be several demos throughout this over the next 2 days, and there's some cards on your tables if you want to take them and share them with your friends. They say they have the session times on for the demos, in which we'll be able to explore the tool a little further, and you can ask questions in a more personal setting about what the tool provides. This is taking just a second. I'll let that load. Maybe I'll go through one more quick section of the survey. Take a look at data centers. So here's data centers defined. And these definitions are in our glossary. You can access them on our website. Data center funding doesn't look too different than many of the other sections of higher ed of the IT department. Staffing, again, doesn't look vastly different from the other sections of the higher ed department, or the IT department. So here's just a few quick statistics. Generally, institutions are providing 2 data centers on their campuses. We looked at disaster recovery plans, and this year 25% have tested the data center disaster recovery plan in the last year. Last year this number was 23%, so we're hoping that that's increasing over time. And also, along with that, the percentage of institutions who have no disaster recovery plan is dropping over time, so we're hoping that that continues as well. There are quite a few institutions that outsource their data center operations. We're thinking that some of these are sharing at other institutions. Here's a look at the bars on the left of this graph indicate the year that the little line in the middle of each bar is the median. And the line at either end is the 25th and 75th percentile, so these are box plots also. And the line on the left side of this graph indicates when the disaster, or when the data center was implemented, and the line on the right indicates when the data center was upgraded. So the gap between the medians, in my opinion, is like the average time it took you to upgrade your data center. And public bachelor's institutions have a pretty tiny gap, but public doctoral institutions have a pretty big gap. But when you look at this at the institution level, it's usually about 7 or 8 years. So the gap isn't actually quite so big. Data centers, a little more than half of the data centers are virtualized. And I'm guessing that we'll see that increase over the years. So let's see if the reporting tool is up. Yes. Here's our core data reporting tool. All the content in the survey is broken into different topic areas, similarly to the way I presented this information today. So there will be two different ways you can navigate the information in the reporting tool. You can use the topic dropdown and look at the data by topic. Each topic is represented on a specific dashboard. Or you can, if you're interested in the answer to a specific question, you can use this dropdown and go to a specific question. It'll take you to the dashboard that question's at. You can also click along the top once you learn which dashboards you're interested in. This sometimes takes just a second, and the connection down here is a little bit slow. So these dashboards are combinations of questions on a specific topic. Each graph on the dashboard is a summary of one question in the survey. The dropdown at the top is where you can select a peer group, and the peer groups you did create in previous years of the survey will still be accessible through this tool. So here's some peer groups that I created earlier. They're not very interesting. But when you click on a specific Carnegie class or a peer group, you can see that the data in the dashboard changes. So all of the data on the dashboard is summarized by whatever you pick in the dropdown. Here's a look at central IT staffing and the resolution for the presentation doesn't really translate to this screen. It's a little, it looks smaller when you're looking at it on your own monitor. So these green bars represent what your institution replied with in the survey, and the blue bars behind the green bars indicate what your peer group that you selected in the dropdown, what the median or summary data is for that, so you can visually see how you compare to your peers on the dashboard. If you click on any specific piece, bar, or pie chart in the dashboard, it'll take you to a more detailed report, which looks a little bit similar to what you're used to in the old reporting tool. And it has the listing of the question so that you can be reminded of which question you answered in the survey. And it also has a graphical summary of the response for that question for your institution. Whatever you selected in the drop-down box, so if you created your own peer group, it'll be the next graph in line. It also shows you what your Carnegie class responded for and then all of higher ed. And then below this is the actual data for each institution and their responses for each part of the question. And right now we see 2012 data, and if you scroll a little bit further to the right, you'll see 2011 data. So any question that was in the survey last year will have the 2011 data in the reporting tool as well. If you right-click on the graph, you can download the data for the graph and also the visual for the graph. If you right-click on the table, you can download the data for the table. So that will be accessible. We also have produced a core metrics dashboard, which is a compilation of ratios that used to exist in the old service. And this wasn't available in the service last year, so we're hoping that this return of this functionality is helpful for you. And again, you'll be able to click on each of these graphs and go to a more detailed report. Okay. We have 7 or so minutes left. I can take some questions about the reporting tool or any of the sections of higher ed of the IT department, any of the summary statistics I presented. Yeah. We define that as, I had a little asterisk in some of these. It's defined as either run partially or entirely by an external supplier through a contracted outsource or application service provider arrangement. So maybe some of the ones that said that they outsource, it's only a partial outsource, and we've had requests to change the questions so that we can identify the percent of the service that's being outsourced, so we'll be looking at that in the future. Anybody else? It's kind of hard to see with these bright lights in my eyes. Okay. Well, thanks for attending today. I really appreciate all of your participation in the survey. It helps us learn so much more about what we're interested in. Thank you.